This is an ABC podcast.
Hello. Welcome to This Working Life. I'm Lisa Leong. Increasingly, studies have shown that a diverse and inclusive workforce is more productive and more innovative. Diversity includes people from different backgrounds, life experiences, and physical disabilities. But successfully implementing a diverse and inclusive work culture, that's where the challenge is. So today, we investigate what does it take to build and maintain a workforce that is accepting and understanding of people with disabilities. We'll be speaking with a senior manager at the ANZ Bank, which last year was named one of the top three organisations in Australia for disability inclusiveness. And we'll speak to a former risk and compliance officer in counter-terrorism financing, whose personal circumstances opened up a whole new career for her as a disability consultant. Amanda Laurie-Jones became an advocate for people with disabilities because of her own health issues and workplace experiences. She now spends her time visiting workplaces, teaching them how even small changes can have a huge positive impact on people with a disability. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you.
Before we get into your work as a disability consultant, I would really like you to share your story with us because 12 years ago, you made an incredible decision that some people would consider quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it's not a common thing where people would elect to have their legs amputated.
Wow. What led to that?
Yeah, so I have a complex condition called scleroderma. And so scleroderma is an overproduction of collagen, and that collagen builds up, and it doesn't just thicken up your skin. It can build up in your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, etc. And so I was having a lot of issues with my legs, lots of skin ulcers, skin grafts and cancers, and it was just a repeated cycle of in and out of hospital.
And painful.
Yes, absolutely. So I bit the bullet and decided that it was time to get them off.
How old were you?
I was in my 30s, so it was okay. I was a bit mature to make that decision.
Right.
And I think too, you know, it's a funny thing that I often say, I wish I had have done it sooner.
Really?
Mm.
And why is that?
I don't have the disruption anymore.
And what do you mean by disruption? You mean having to go into
doctors, in
surgery.
And out of hospital, you know, having to really strongly build a career where I don't have to worry about medical appointments.
So let's talk about life after 30. So now you're experiencing, you were in a private sector organisation, a big business.
Yes.
What was life like then in terms of the difficulties you faced?
I suppose the attitude was the biggest barrier from my perspective. You know, during my return to work experience after I had my leg amputated, it was that, oh, well, these are the limited duties that you can do. Instead of, you know, being on the phones, they took me and put me away in a separate office to do paperwork. I was a little bit sort of perplexed at that, thinking, yeah, but this is my brain that I'm using for my work, not my leg.
And did you challenge that?
Oh, of course I did.
Right.
That's how I became an advocate.
And then where do you draw the line with the challenge? Because how often are you thinking, oh, okay, that's another example. I'm now getting exhausted.
Oh, I do get exhausted, but, you know, naturally I'm a person that likes to think of solutions. So from thinking about solutions, I will challenge someone, but I'll put forth a couple of solutions around what that issue is as well.
Now, can you share with us the example of a difficult moment with a team building exercise at a lawn bowls club?
Oh, yes, that one was quite interesting. So, it was a team building activity where the venue wasn't accessible.
The whole venue?
Well, a little bit of it. There was a teeny little step to get in, uh-huh. But when I got there, and it was up kind of a bit of a ramp, so pushing myself up that ramp was a bit of a challenge. Getting to the lawn bowls activity itself, I couldn't actually participate in lawn bowls. And then, of course, the function area where they were serving drinks and food, they were all up on high tables. And
yeah.
So here I am in a low wheelchair, not being able to participate in conversation.
And because everyone's standing up.
Yeah, and accessing food. So I felt extremely excluded. And I left after 20 minutes.
Did you tell people why you were leaving?
No, I left.
Hmm.
And then retrospectively, I went and had a chat with the general manager around how we can improve this.
And how did that go?
Yeah, it didn't go very well.
Really?
No, no.
Because?
She kind of took it personal. She felt like I was having an attack on her in not doing the right thing. So from that perspective, I took it a step further and I wrote an article for the intranet around inclusive events in complete general terms, you know, thinking about when you're at an event, can people access food? You know, and if you're in a venue that's really noisy and you've got someone with a hearing impairment, you know, considering quiet spaces, quiet areas, it was just a whole range of solutions around different disabilities.
So tell me, is this, or how common is this reaction that people feel like it's reflecting on them as leaders and managers?
It depends on the culture of the organisation, I think, and some people don't have exposure to people with disability, so they don't know how to react. And I think she was a very, very corporate-minded person that wanted to climb the ladder. So her reputation to her was very important.
So we're hearing about these really horrible experiences for you. But once again, because of your optimism, you've turned this into something and you've become a senior disability consultant with Accessible Actions. And so you started this. What was your purpose?
Yeah, I think because personally I was experiencing so many barriers in the workplace and then coming across other people that had the same barriers, I studied for a little bit doing community development and my entire class was people with disability. And so...
And when we're talking about people with disabilities, what would you include in that?
Yeah, vision impairment, hearing impairment, neurodiverse, so autistic.
Oh.
So it was a really broad range of my classmates, acquired brain injury.
And are people surprised by how broad we're actually talking here?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Usually you mention the word disability and they think about wheelchair.
Right. So what are some of the most common issues people with disabilities face in the workplace?
Attitude is number one.
All right. Hard to monitor that.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's about the misconception of what people with disability can do. They kind of have low expectations of they don't want a career, they're happy to stay in the same job. They kind of think that we have limited capabilities because we have a disability.
What are some of the other ones?
Yeah, there's sort of, you know, physical built environment issues. So stairs, not having ramps, and simple things like people not pushing their chairs in. Like when you've got somebody who's a wheelchair user, you know, in an office space, if they don't push the chairs around, they become kind of a little bit of obstacles. And even for someone with vision impairment, you know, you're going around the office and it's like, bang, there's a chair that you didn't expect it to be.
So you go into a workplace and you start sort of looking around with your solutions hat on. Give me some examples of some basic changes that you may start suggesting.
Yeah, so one of the simplest ones is accessibility with documents. Microsoft already has the features in it. It's just learning how to use them. When you go into Word and you've got your styles at
the top. I'm not very good with Word, but keep on going.
Yeah, so you've just got your styles up the top and that creates like list headings. So if someone's using a screen reader software, they can jump between headings and when they're rereading a document, they don't have to read the entire thing over again and it just makes it more efficient for them. I suppose, you know, your kitchen areas, I mean, that's one of the things lunchtime should be enjoyed by everybody. So have a look at what your kitchen area looks like and can someone access water? Can they access the microwave? You know, is the fridge, you know, easy to open and does it take up circulation space with the wheelchair?
I can imagine you start with some quick wins as you're walking around.
I do.
How big do you go with suggested changes?
Yeah, so anything from websites, so having a look to see how accessible their website is as well. Also thinking about, you know, what are their policies, processes, customer base information. So how do they deal with customers? So, yeah, it becomes quite big.
You're listening to This Working Life on RN, and today we're looking at how workplaces can become more inclusive of people with disabilities. Meg Dalling is Head of Accessibility at ANZ Bank. Last year, the Australian Network on Disability named the ANZ as one of the top three organisations in Australia for its inclusivity program. Meg, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Lisa. Delighted to be here.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
One of the areas that ANZ scored particularly well was the bank's headquarter building at the Docklands in Melbourne. Can you take us through some of the design features?
Yeah, so we have, for example, accessible toilets on every floor of the building. So one of the things you might find is very problematic for someone who's a wheelchair user or uses crutches to move around is you may have an accessible toilet, but, you know, if it doesn't have an automatic door, that can be very, very difficult to navigate in and out. We have very, very good moving space around the building. We make sure that we have charging points that for people that use motorised wheelchairs. But that building is actually now 10 years old, and we're in the process of fitting out a new building next door. And there's been a lot of thinking that's gone into that next building.
Has the thinking changed a lot in that space of time?
Yeah, I would say we definitely did deeper consultation. So both with specialists, a little bit like the sort of work that Amanda does in her area. We also consulted quite deeply with our own staff. So we have an employee-led abilities network and we reached out to them. We said, what's been your experience working in this building? What are the kinds of things that we can do better?
What can we learn from?
What can we learn from? Absolutely. So, you know, we heard things like kitchen layout, making sure that hot and cold taps were, you know, towards the front of a sink rather than at the back. So even things like that were still not ideal in our current Docklands building. We looked at things like, you know, the elevators and making sure that the technology there is the latest version of that technology. So potentially someone...
What would the latest version of the technology help with?
Yeah, so making sure that even those screens that you touch onto, that they have accessibility options. We see a lot of touchscreen technology being rolled out in so many areas now, and they're not necessarily accessible to people with vision impairment. There's some tactile indicators on them, or at you know, there is an alternative there to get some support from someone, or have the touchscreen read out to them. So things like that we hopefully are getting better at as we go.
Sounds like you put your heart and soul into this. So what have you seen coming out of all of this?
I would say we do have a very, very inclusive workplace. We have many staff with disabilities, both visible and invisible. We have a strong employee-led abilities network that are very engaged around promoting awareness. So I think what this does is it opens up employment opportunities, and what we can do as a large employer is we can share those stories regularly and we can continue to really spread the word, if you like. And I think, you know, that's a really important role for a large organisation as well.
So talking about employment, let's get on to recruitment. What do you do in your recruitment process to encourage inclusivity?
Yeah, so I would say we strive very much towards a barrier-free recruitment process, making sure that, you know, in a digital space where someone is submitting an application through, you know, a career portal, through your recruitment website, that is fully accessible. So for someone who is using a screen reader to do that, we need to make sure that we meet the best practice guidelines around this so that we aren't necessarily locking people out at that first gate. Now, there will always be cases where we might need to have some workarounds, but that's okay. As long as we're aware of those and we are always adjusting and being flexible for every applicant. The other objective is to be open to feedback, to hopefully project an inclusive culture so that people feel always able to raise concerns with us so that we can respond and get better.
And how do you support the people doing the recruiting, the interviewers as well?
Yeah, so we have rolled out some disability awareness or disability confidence training to our frontline recruiters. That is things like using inclusive language, knowing how to ask questions and not feeling, you know, inhibited around asking questions, and also having a very flexible and open approach to that interview and selection process.
Let's go to Amanda Laurie-Jones. What's some examples of good inclusive language?
I like the language around adjustments. I actually don't like people talking about disability itself,
Because at the end of the day, if you have the right adjustment in place, your disability doesn't matter.
Right, adjustments to the workplace.
A process, a built environment, a car space. It doesn't matter what the adjustment is, but if your adjustment is actually in place, then the disability becomes irrelevant. And from my perspective, you know, what I would like to see is that every single manager, doesn't matter if they have a person with disability in their team or not, that they kind of just ask the question, what is it that you need to be successful in your role?
Is that going to be too general?
Or? Potentially, but at the same time, you know, for a person with disability, they'll be like, yep, I need an adjustment.
Got it. Anything to add, do you think, Meg, on inclusive language or what not to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key principle with inclusive language is that it's person first. You know, there's a lot of language that is still quite prevalent in the community, which makes people with disability and indeed the rest of us, it can make us very uncomfortable. And so we should be saying a person with vision impairment. We should be saying a person with hearing impairment, a person who uses a wheelchair, for example. Yeah, so very much person.
Say it
first.
How it is.
Say it how it
Maybe
is.
Maybe that's a good rule for us.
Yeah, I'm sure this should be a universal rule for all of our language.
Meg Dalling is Head of Accessibility at ANZ Bank. One of the things that you became aware of was work hours.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a team member who had a mobility impairment, and for him to get in and out of the city during peak hour was really quite challenging, was very busy on public transport. So we simply made an adjustment to his work start time. So he came in at 10 o'clock instead of what might have been 8:30, 9 o'clock regular starting time. So very simple adjustment, but for him personally, that would have made a huge impact on his sort of start to the day.
Amanda shared her story about social events. How does your bank approach organising social events?
We have checklists, we have guidance that we publish for staff on our intranet site. I think we can always do more to raise awareness of these things. We also provide a lot of resources on our internal intranet site for staff on how to welcome customers with disability. If you're a line manager, or, you know, various sort of guidance questions answered. We're also about to roll out some frontline training. So all of our branch staff across Australia and in eventually we will reach our contact centre staff and our feedback staff. We're going to do some disability awareness training for those staff because we know that, you know, they are the interface with a community, and we want to equip them to really welcome customers with disability, feel comfortable, feel confident, and know, you know, how to deliver a great customer experience.
How do you ensure people don't get training fatigue?
That is a very, very topical question. It's definitely a real challenge, particularly in the banking sector. It's a highly regulated sector, so staff do a lot of training. And I think with this type of training, you know, we really don't want this to be a tick and flick exercise. We need to think about how do we get cut through.
Have you got an answer, Amanda?
Well, I think the training needs to be made real. And I think, you know, if it's a face-to-face training, you've got that opportunity to actually put it out into the room. What are these people's fear? Like, because that's basically what happens. People fear disability to a certain extent because they're scared of saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing. So it's actually talking about the real-life stories or the things that may be impacting them in their own personal lives. It's like, well, I've got a friend with disability and I think I said the wrong thing the other day. You know, they can share that story. You put that to them. The other way is the power of personal story. So having someone with disability actually present and share those impactful stories where people have the aha moments.
What's the role of good leadership here?
Our leadership is absolutely fundamental. We need our leaders to support this cause. We need them to be calling out things that they see that they're uncomfortable with. We're lucky that our CEOs really engage with this topic. Diversity is very much part of our organisational strategy. So our CEO has done things like hosted an event late last year where we have a disability mentoring scheme that we run across the bank and together with Dylan Alcott. So it was a bit of a star-studded lineup at that particular event.
Amanda Laurie-Jones, you're a disability consultant. What what is your experience about leadership and what a difference it makes?
Oh, goodness, yes. The tone from the top is basically it's how they talk about disability as well, and being really positive about it is the way that they'll change their culture.
What are your thoughts listening to the ANZ story?
Yeah, look, I believe in ANZ in regards to their accessibility, and having Dylan Alcott as their person that is actually raising awareness for them, I think the profile of having Dylan within mainstream media as well has actually added to their beautiful reputation around accessibility.
We've talked about many different dimensions of how this plays out. What is the role then of policy?
I'm always reviewing policies. I go into organisations. And it is around, you know, creating an inclusive policy. For example, adding little bits and pieces on the form to say, have you got a personal emergency evacuation plan? Basically, if there is an emergency in your building, how do you deal with it with a person with disability?
And you think putting it into a policy does come out the other end?
Bit more of an education piece, yeah.
Right.
Depends on how it's communicated in the organisation, but yeah, definitely.
And what's been your experience, Meg, at ANZ with inclusive policy and how it plays out in practice?
Policy has got a really important role to play because policy is a statement of your commitment and it's a statement of your, you know, your basic requirements, your basic parameters for operating, whether it's recruitment policy, whether it's your workplace adjustments policy, whatever it might be.
How long has your policy been around for?
Well, I think we would have had policy for some time, but you might be talking about our accessibility plan. We've had an accessibility plan at ANZ for about 12 years, and we review it around about every 2 years. So we refresh it, and we develop some new commitments to keep driving the organisation forward. And that is a public plan. It's on our website.
Looking
so
back,
we're very
what difference has it made?
There are people that are accountable for delivering on each part of the plan.
Part of their KPIs?
Yeah, I think it is definitely part of their job in the sense that they have to turn up to our steering committee, they need to report on progress. And, you know, at every half year, we need to actually ask ourselves, have we made progress against each of these commitments? And if not, why not?
Amanda, so we've been hearing about a very large organisation, ANZ. What are your thoughts on big versus small and the change you can make?
Yeah, look, it's harder for small organisations, I think, because, again, resourcing, budget, those sorts of things become challenges when you're thinking about rolling out training or anything like that. But I think, you know, for smaller organisations, you know, they could just get a small disability organisation in maybe to do their catering for a function. And that kind of just is another way of awareness. And there's plenty of resources that are actually already readily available out there in the internet. So I think tapping into those sorts of resources is a good thing.
So in our program, we like to look at things at all levels. So right now, I want to drill down into the individual level. So me as a person in a workplace where I might not have that much control over my environment, what tips would you give me for how I can encourage a more inclusive workplace as an individual?
There's a couple of ways that you can do it. So if your organisation has an accessibility action plan, just make sure that you read it because I'm sure there's something in there that's going to actually trigger of what you do on a day-to-day basis and go, oh, maybe I should change how I do that. The other thing is, of course, you know, making sure that you expose yourself to people with disability. Go to the network events and actually become an ally. And, you know, people with disability, you know, would be very happy to have allies on their abilities networks or those sorts of disability employee networks.
Meg, have you got a tip for me?
Yeah, look, I think the best thing we can all do is just lead by example. You know, we should really behave the way we want others to behave. So if we want an inclusive workplace, we must be inclusive ourselves. We must be attentive to the different needs, preferences, work styles of others around us.
Thank you for those amazing tips. Thank you to my guests, Amanda Laurie-Jones, a disability consultant with Accessible Action, and Meg Dalling, Head of Accessibility at ANZ Bank.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
That's the program for this week. Thanks to producer Verica Jokic and technical producer Brendan Marola. If you enjoyed this episode, please support us by hitting subscribe and giving us a review on your favourite podcast provider. It all counts. And if you'd like to find out more about navigating workplace exclusion, check out ABC Life. We'll put a link up to their stories on our website. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next week, keep working.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.